high cost of living. Ain't nothing like the cost of living high.
What's happening, and happy High Cost Halloween. Because it is spooky time of year, I wanted to do something totally different today. It's a bonus episode. It's a Halloween special, and it's my first true crime podcast. I've had a different Halloween experience so far this year. I visited the pumpkin patch. I've watched every horror movie you can possibly think of. And I visited a place called Man Farms in Abbotsford, British Columbia. And when I say every horror movie, I mean I've watched some terrifying stuff all throughout September and October, pretty much every night. Something different. Even during the research for this episode, I was slightly disturbed, you know. I've genuinely had real life nightmares over Andre Chikatilo, today's topic, because I've been researching and thinking about him so much. Man Farms, shout out to those good people over there. It's a scare house kind of thing, like the Nightmare Realm in Cork, but on steroids. It is actually unreal. You walk through a cornfield and every creature imaginable is popping out at you, left, right and center. It's really well done, professionally done. The costumes, the makeup, the props, the atmosphere created is on point. And out of four people, I was at the back. So every creep imaginable was on my tail, like chainsaws, clowns whispering in my ear. I am still genuinely traumatized from it, but if I didn't go, I never would have heard the end of it. So I'm glad I went, but never again. No Halloween parties this year, no trick-or-treating, because of the strange circumstances, of course. So pop your headphones in, lay back in the cot, and listen to this horror story I'm about to get into. This is truly horrific stuff, and on a serious note, not for the faint-hearted. I have to drop a disclaimer today because for me to tell the story as authentically as I can't leave out any of the gory details. So throughout the course of the lockdown, when I'm not watching horror movies, I started watching a lot of true crime documentaries. I had a mild interest in them before, but lately I've really gotten into them, and I suppose most people are inclined to look away or block their ears or change the channel when they hear a scary story. But lately I'm very intrigued, and like I said before, I really want to dabble in all kinds of podcast genres, you know, until I maybe find my niche. So I thought, why not? It's Halloween, let's do this. A few recommendations, if I may: 60 Minutes Australia, Dateline, and Paula Zahn. These channels have some great documentaries on YouTube if you look them up, and even a bonus, they're always hosted by a smoking hot cougar, so look out for them. But now, in all seriousness, a lot of those presenters would be a big inspiration behind my true crime podcast. I just love how real the interviews are, like cold cases, unsolved mysteries, and ongoing investigations. These all have the elements needed for good storytelling, like intrigue, emotion, mystery and suspense, all while having the added element of being real. And I always thought a horror movie is 10 times scarier when you know it's based on a true story. Usually I'm just panned out on the couch watching YouTube and the next related video will come on automatically. So it might be a different documentary about the same person and I'm too lazy to get up, so I just let it play. So I've seen them all and I'm pretty well versed in a lot of these true crime documentaries. Honourable mentions, I shouldn't say honourable, but maybe runners-up goes to the likes of Jeffrey Dahmer, Ted Bundy and Jack the Ripper. But today's topic is known as the Rostov Ripper, and in my opinion he's the most vile serial killer Russia has ever seen, maybe even the world. Certainly the worst I've personally ever heard of. and his name was Andrei Chikatilo, the butcher of Rostov, Russia. He sexually assaulted, murdered, and mutilated at least 52 women and children between 1978 and 1990. So a 12-year killing spree, and lads, some of the stuff this maniac did are unspeakable, but I'm about to go deep into Chikatilo's early life, his family life. We're going to talk about his motive, the police investigation, and the court case. I'll also drop some eerie facts along the way. As far as serial killers go, like, I don't want to glorify him because he destroyed so many families and stuff, but this guy did numbers. He's like the goat murderer. The old Al said the other day he's like the Cristiano Ronaldo of serial killing. For fuck's sake. So let's go deep. His victims range between 9 years old and 45 years old, but he predominantly went for like younger victims. I'm sure the 45-year-old was just a parent of one of the kids he was after. 21 boys, 14 girls, and 18 young women to be precise. His usual methods included strangulation and stabbing, and he was known to target his unfortunate victims at bus stops, and he would lure them back to his place or into the woods with his friendly demeanor. His main murdering characteristics included cannibalism, necrophilia, evisceration, and mutilation. Real nasty stuff. But what made this guy, who was once a school teacher and an attentive father, like, what drove him to do such sick, sadistic stuff? To find the answer, I've got to take it way back to 1936, when he was born in rural Ukraine. And because of your man Stalin's policies in agriculture, it caused widespread hardship and famine. And there were times when the scrawny kid, Chikatilo, would have to eat leaves and grass like a pony. And seeing dead soldiers laying around the street wasn't out of the norm during those times. He suffered from hydrocephalus, basically meaning that he pissed the bed a lot. He had water on the brain, causing him to piss the bed. And he also couldn't keep an erection. And this is something that would have a major impact on him throughout his entire life. His father would have been absent for many months at a time as World War II was escalating. He was captured by the German Nazis and he surrendered to them, and then he was returned to the Ukraine but was seen as a coward for surrendering. And while he was away, young Andrei would share a bed with his mother. And he'd piss the bed quite often, and then his mom would get frustrated and beat the shit out of him as a result. He grew up in a little hut with his mother, and he was made to stand and watch as the German Nazis burnt it down. This isn't verified, but it's largely believed that he also had to witness his mother being raped by a Nazi, which resulted in the birth of his younger sister. And if that's not traumatic enough, he was told by his mother that before he was born, his older brother was abducted and cannibalized during the famine. And because his father had surrendered to the Germans instead of being rewarded for taking part in the war, his family were ridiculed in the local community and Chikatilo suffered terribly at the hands of bullies as a result. Not only because of their cowardice reputation, but he had terrible eyesight and wore big thick glasses that people made fun of at school. And it was known to many that he was sexually impotent, giving these bullies more ammunition. This caused him to become painfully shy as an adolescent and developing a bitterness towards girls over time just because they didn't accept him. And despite being socially awkward, he was a clever student and communist member. But at the age of 15 years old, he had his first and only sexual encounter as a teen. He overpowered his sister's 11-year-old friend to the ground, which made him aroused, and he ejaculated quickly during the brief struggle. Word got out about this incident, and he faced further ridicule in school. But that being his first sexual encounter, it created an exciting association between sexual gratification and force and violence, you know. Fast forward a few years later, and his sister was growing concerned by his lack of success with women, so she decided to set him up with a friend of hers, and this friend was completely unaware of his sexual impotency, But they married nonetheless within 2 weeks of meeting each other. I think both parties were kind of out of options and maybe a little bit desperate. So they got married within 2 weeks of meeting each other. This was in 1963, and despite his lack of interest in conventional sex, he fathered two children throughout the 60s. Pardon the graphics, but I believe it was a case of him just pulling the mickey off himself and then lobbing it into the missus in the last second. It's believed the wife was just happy that he wasn't an alcoholic and he didn't beat her up, you know, which many Soviet Union members would have done in those days, kind of would have been the norm almost. But she even provided an alibi to police on a few occasions to cover Chikatilo's ass. And then in the late 70s, he secretly purchased an old house in the forest where he would lure his victims. And when pressure mounted from police and the police investigations started heating up, he would just lay low for like 9 months to a year and spend time with the family. But it was all a facade, you know. Everyone saw him as the Soviet member, the father, the family man. But inside he was a monster. He was 6 foot tall man and he just blended in, and he did not fit the profile of a serial killer. And in Russia at those times, police had never dealt with what was to come. So I'm going to talk a little bit about his work life, and from there the story gets really weird. He began teaching in 1971, and he was a teacher of Russian language and literature. However, he couldn't maintain control over the classroom. He couldn't control his students at all. They showed him blatant disrespect to his face by calling him names, and many of his students even sparked up cigarettes right in front of him during class. He didn't have his fellow teachers' respect either, as many of them were wise to his fondling around kids. He began entering girls' changing rooms and dorms unannounced, and several complaints were filed against him. In his first known assault in the school swimming pool, he groped a young girl student and he ejaculated as she struggled. And it's also known that he assaulted a girl whom he had locked inside his classroom. As the complaints started piling up, the school asked him to resign. No police involvement or anything, he was just asked to leave, and his heinous acts were not made public at all. I don't even think they knew how to deal with a situation like this back then. It was completely alien to them. So he told his family he was fired for stealing and that the school were accusing him of being a thief, basically. And soon after that, he began teaching in a different school in the same town, but he lost that job in 1978 due to staff funding. He then began a job as a supply clerk for a factory based in Rostov. This new job required him to travel quite a lot, giving him access to out-of-town victims and time to carefully plan his next move. So yeah, same year, 1978, this is when he began to act on his murderous desires and triggered the most haunting killing spree in history. He was 42 years old at the time, and he lured 9-year-old girl Yelena Zakatnova to his secret house. He attempted to rape her but failed to get an erection, and this infuriated him. And when she began to struggle, he choked her out and stabbed her in the abdomen multiple times. He dumped her little body in a nearby river, throwing her school bag in after her. According to his testimony, it's well documented that Chikatilo was seized by trembling excitement when he made his first kill, and when he made contact with her blood. Basically, he would kind of bathe in the girl's blood. And this is pretty much the only thing that turned him on and got him aroused. And despite evidence pointing strongly to Chikatilo, such as the child's blood in the snow outside his house, his wife provided an alibi to the police, and they actually pinned the murder on a local man who had previously served time for a similar offence. After police threatened to kill the man's wife and a brutal interrogation, he confessed to the killing under duress. He was then executed in 1983. So after a close call with police, Chikatilo did not strike again for 3 years. He kept the head down and laid low. And after 3 years, that's when he kind of began standing around suburban bus stations and train stations, and he'd hang out in cafes and lurk the streets looking for vulnerable targets, homeless women, prostitutes, and even sometimes special needs children. He would approach his unfortunate victims and start up a conversation, and he came across as the nice, friendly schoolteacher type dude. He would tempt his victims with money or food, I suppose prostitutes with money, and he'd offer kids like a snack while they waited for the next bus. And I suppose a lot of these unfortunate victims were just naive, young, bored, and willing. He would lure his victims into the dark, secluded forest paths and then ambush them. He would tie the helpless victims' hands, stab them repeatedly with a foot-long knife, and rape them, whether they were dead or alive. He would stuff their mouth with dirt and leaves to silence their cry for help. He mutilated his victims by amputating their breasts, often with his teeth. His signature, or trademark move you could say, was gouging out their eyes. He later claimed that he was afraid his image would be imprinted in the eyes of his victims after death, and he had to remove them to prevent his identity from being known. And it's known that he would often bite off male or female reproductive organs, nipples, tongues, and top lips. It's also believed that a lot of his young male victims were still breathing while he ate off their penis and testicles. If that doesn't send a chill down your spine, I don't know what will. And while he would viciously stab his victims, he would literally fuck them through the stab wounds. That is absolutely gruesome, like. That's truly the stuff of nightmares right there. So how did they put a stop to the sick bastard? Let's talk about the police investigation. By 1983, the number of victims had risen to 17, and it was rising at an alarming rate. And as the body count mounted, media coverage was suppressed to maintain public order. Rumours of cult-like killings spread throughout the town, and even talks of a werewolf. While he was literally getting better at killing and picking his victims and executing his vicious plans, police progress was slow. In the absence of computers, and they're also lacking police resources, they didn't have today's sophisticated DNA technology. However, huge surveillance operations were put in place at local transport hubs. He was arrested at a bus station for acting suspiciously. Parts of his history began to unfold as police discovered his perverted past. They discovered his penchant for children and particularly young girls. Blood and semen samples were taken from victims, and the samples indicated a type AB blood. Suspects matching blood type AB would be detained for further questioning, and those who did not match were released. Chikatilo was found to be type A blood and was removed from the murder investigation. He did, however, spend 3 months in jail for outstanding charges such as theft, and he was released in December 1984. And he didn't kill again until August 1985. So as you can see, he'd lay low for a few months before striking again. And in 1986, he didn't kill anyone at all throughout that whole year. This is when he celebrated his 50th birthday. And when these dormant periods occurred, police believed that the killer had died or just stopped killing or was incarcerated for other crimes. I suppose he just could not resist the urge, and he started killing again in 1987. And this is when he really started doing damage, killing 3 to 4 times a month sometimes. And it was like a casual hobby at this point, like going out and getting a takeaway. It appeared at this time he was targeting more young boys than girls. I don't think he was too picky about his victims, to be honest. He would just take anyone who was unfortunate enough to fall into his trap. It appeared the killer was also taking increased risks, basically getting cocky and killing in public places. He would still target bus and train stations, but not as often, as he knew they were being heavily monitored. He killed 19 victims in 2 years. So then police efforts drastically increased. Desperate for answers, they began interviewing convicted murderers on death row, awaiting to be executed, hoping to gain some kind of insight into the mind of a monster. Enter Alexander Bukhanovsky, a psychiatrist hired by police as they grew more frustrated. He refined the whole profile of the killer, described him as a necrosadist, a very sick individual that achieves sexual gratification from the suffering and death of others. He also put an age on the killer, between 45 and 50 years old. That's significantly older than what was believed up until that point. Svetlana Korostik was his final victim, a 22-year-old girl, and her body was found on November 13th in the woods, and then he was finally caught a week later on November 20th, 1990. He was spotted at a bus station attempting to strike up a conversation with a young boy until he was scared off by the boy's mother. Thank God, lucky for the boy. He tried this once again with another youngster, all the while he was being observed by some undercover policemen. They approached him, identified themselves as police officers, and arrested him on suspicious behavior. He refused to say anything while in custody, but later pleaded his innocence, stating that he had been falsely accused of the same accusations back in 1984. However, teeth marks proved that it was him, and the rope and knife that he had on him during the time of his arrest certainly didn't help his case either. Bukhanovsky, the psychiatrist, interviewed him and convinced him that he was not working with the police. He was not judge, he was not jury, rather just a friendly psychiatrist trying to gain insight and understand the mind of a killer from a scientific context. Flattered by this approach, Chikatilo began to open up and confess after several hours of being interviewed. He started providing extensive details of his killings and talking about his motives. He would even lead police to the murder sites, and he demonstrated exactly how he raped and how he killed his innocent victims. Police would start digging shallow graves, and they would discover children's clothing and remains while Andrei just watched with no remorse. The Rostov Ripper was finally caught, and while police had arrested him for like 34, 35 killings, it was discovered that he was responsible for over 53 murders, and many people believe that this number is much, much higher. So what was his motive for all this carry-on? During his testimony, he revealed being bullied as a youth and in adulthood. He despised seeing young people falling in love and having sex, as he felt cheated out of the chance to do just that. He was clearly a paedophile, and the only thing that turned him on was gory, gruesome violence. All of his crimes were sexually driven, and I suppose he just could not resist the temptation to give in to his true desires. Then began the debate of if he was medically insane or just a cold, calculated killer. When the court case began, it was absolute chaos. The place was packed. Like, I suppose he had over 50 victims, so that's over 50 immediate family members all showing up enraged, looking for a piece of Chikatilo. He would try to convince people that he was mentally psychotic to avoid the death penalty, but they were not buying it. He was declared sane to stand trial in 1994 in one of the most absurd court cases in history. They kept him in a steel cage at the top of the courtroom, just like Hannibal Lecter. And this was for his own protection against the victims' families. From his cage, he would display some psychotic behavior, taunting and singing at the families of the deceased victims. It's believed this was all an act, just to convince the judge that he was medically insane. He even dropped his pants at the top of the room, exposing himself when faced with the people that wanted him dead. A far cry from the painfully shy adolescent we spoke about earlier. This must have been extremely traumatic for the families, you know, many of them getting sick and fainting at the sight of this monster, so prayers out to the families and the victims. He was found guilty of 52 out of 53 murder charges and sentenced to death plus 80 years for each one. He appealed the verdict, again attempting to be deemed insane. The appeal was denied, and on Valentine's Day, February 14th, 1994, they took him into a soundproof cell and shot him one time behind the right ear. In his final statement, it reads, "And now my brain shall be taken apart, piece by piece, to be examined, so that there won't be any more like me." And that's exactly what would have happened, just like Frankenstein. Surprisingly enough, many people believe that he was just a very sick man acting against his will. Even the chief of police, who hunted and hated Chikatilo for years, stated that he believes Andre had no control over his actions. Me personally, he gets no sympathy from me. Researching this topic was very disturbing for me, and seeing the haunting black and white pictures of his poor innocent young victims and observing some of the scenes of the crimes he committed is just so grim. So he can blame his rough childhood, he can blame his limp dick, but there's really no excuse for these unspeakable crimes. I felt weird even saying some of these things out loud, but yeah, it's a story that really freaked me out, and I just wanted to share it with you. So happy Halloween. He clearly did fall victim to his inner urge to kill, but you know, no way anybody's getting away with such a horrific killing spree, and for so long in this day and age. But it kind of makes you wonder, like, how many more guys are walking around with these kind of sick urges? Like, who's got the skeletons in their closet? Who knows, man? But that kind of leads me to the last thing that I want to talk about today before I wrap it up, and that is creep catchers. We started talking a bit about creep catcher videos on YouTube, you know, where they'll have a decoy and arrange to meet a child predator outside like a Walmart or a Starbucks or somewhere like that. I think Stinson Hunter is the guy in the UK. He has a big following because he keeps the creeps off the streets. And I was told that an old door guy that worked in a dispensary I was at was on creep catchers in BC. And apparently it's huge in Vancouver, you know. So I looked up all these videos and went down a rabbit hole and just watched all of them. And it's kind of surreal to see them show up in places that I'm actually familiar with, like Tim Hortons, where I would buy my coffee, or a shopping center I'd go to. And they just kind of look like your everyday neighborly guys. They blend in so well, like, and they catch everyone from local mayors to teachers to homeless guys to police officers. And it's just something about watching these perverts get their balls handed to them that is kind of addictive. And I love listening to their same old excuses as well every episode. And they're totally put on blast on YouTube. Like, they risk it all, the dirty bastards. And then they get exposed to everyone they know. Their wives, their families, and even their employers. Their life is ruined right before your eyes. And rightly so. They showed up with the intention to ruin a child's life, so it's well deserved. I recommend CC Unit on YouTube. There's some good videos there. CC Unit. You see how the profile of these guys varies so much, and they're all around us, like. And they're just the type of guys that blend into a crowd so well, you'd really never expect it from looking at them. And I've seen a few videos where more than one creep will show up, and it's clear that they're involved in, like, foreign sex trafficking. That's fucking terrifying. Like, I know a few people wrote up in the Irish in Vancouver group about being chased by a man in a van, literally, like, this month. So do be careful out there. Maybe get yourself a whistle, get some pepper spray, and walk in pairs. People don't want to hear about it. People don't want to talk about it because it is an uncomfortable topic, I understand. But unfortunately, it is reality, and we have to spread awareness of it, like, you know. A lot of these monsters are just looking to molest children. Like, just looking to molest children. But I mean, how many Andre Chikatilos are among us? It could be your taxi driver. It could be your teacher. It could be your doctor. Who knows? And you can't be too safe in this day and age. And it's just something to always be mindful of. There's so much stuff goes on in Vancouver that you just don't hear about in the news. Like, I suppose there's so much of it goes on that they can't cover it all in the news. But English Bay in the West End, that's where we lived for the first 2 months when we arrived in Vancouver. And it's a very central spot, very touristy spot, right down by the beach, you know, very well populated with people, like. And there's a body found in a wheelie bin there earlier this month. Also, my friend Darren sent me a video the other day, our local train station in Yale Town, right in the heart of the city, like. There's a woman robbed at gunpoint, and it's on CCTV, so stuff like that happens all the time and you just don't hear about it. So when you live in Canada, there's plenty of this stuff going on right outside your doorstep and you're probably oblivious to it, like. And I know I mentioned it was Stinson Hunter in the UK, and that got me thinking about Ireland. So I began searching creep catchers Ireland and I found nothing. But they're 100% out there, you know, just paedophiles that cannot resist. And I'd love to see a creep catcher vigilante pop up in Ireland. There's a gap in the market there, so I'd say you do some savage numbers too. I mean, could you imagine Dublin alone? Imagine how many perverts are living a secret life in the inner city. And I'm sorry to single out Dublin as well, it's just because of the big population. But if there is a successful creep catchers in Ireland in the next few years, I want a check. It's definitely something that needs to be spoken about more in the news, and sentencing should be a lot harsher than it is. Most of these guys in the videos I'm talking about don't even get arrested. They show up to commit a crime, but they don't get arrested. It's definitely a warning to parents out there, parents of kids of all ages, but particularly to parents of teenagers with apps on their phone like Tinder, Bumble, Plenty of Fish. Teenagers can easily fake their age and meet up with an older man. And God only knows what this older man's intentions are. Like I said, you cannot be too careful in this day and age. So I think that's going to do it for me, folks. I hope I've scared you a little bit, because that was the whole point behind this Halloween special. And what makes it that bit scarier is it is all real. Hopefully I'll still be podcasting next Halloween and I'll try top this scary story, although nobody compares to Andre Chikatilo. Tune back in next time. There is nothing else to do anyway in the midst of a level 5 lockdown, and hopefully I've helped make your Halloween that bit scarier. Please do share with your friends, and as always, thank you for listening. I'm out of here. Good night. God bless. Stay safe. Don't talk to strangers. Aim high and stay weird.